As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, brought to you by The Athletic. It's a podcast all about a life following Watford Football Club. And hey, Watford are doing pretty well at the moment. Another win away this time at Rotherham, 4-1. Mike's with me. Mike, you all right?
Could have been very different, couldn't it? Obviously, we sat to save a penalty and then they scored. That would have made it 3-2. It would have been a very nervy evening, wouldn't it? Hey?
Dear Lord. Adam Leventhal is with us.
I'm not having any of that negativity. How
can you, look, Adam, you have to ignore it. You have to ignore it. Yeah. You have to ignore it.
No.
If you
great
talk
win.
About it.
Great win.
Yeah, great win for Watford. So great, in fact, we are now, and it's weird saying this, we're second. We are actually second in this league, unless massive things happen as we record this podcast and Swansea come back against Bournemouth. But with goal difference ahead of Swansea and 5 points clear Brentford, Watford are in second place in the Championship. That seems the most ridiculous thing I've ever said if I talked to myself a month ago, or just over a month ago, when we had drawn away at Coventry, we lost at home to QPR, and then the 13th of Feb, at home, 6 goals against Bristol City. And since then, Adam, this has been the biggest turnaround in recent years. I can't think of a bigger one.
Yeah, I mean, if you take it back to that Coventry game, that was the sort of the lowest of the low. There wasn't really anywhere else that Watford could go from there. And thankfully, you know, they stuck with it. And then the penny dropped and they played the formation. You'll remember that everyone was asking for, played everyone in their rightful positions. And yeah, just let fly. And it was the first of two sort of sets of 4 wins in a row that started. And the confidence started to flow. They were all together, obviously, and that's just sort of rolled on and on and on. And obviously, we had that game down on the South Coast, which we don't want to talk about too much. But they haven't let that deter them. And they've been building in confidence. They've had more of a swagger in all of these games. And then, obviously, against Rotherham, you know, they've been, you know, off for the best part of a, you know, week, 10 days. With COVID, hit really badly, didn't have their head coach there. Some of the players had been suffering as well. So they were there for the taking. And it was just the professionalism of the performance, in particular in that first half, that really, really showed. And it was just good for them to get into the game, ride out a little bit of, you know, trouble early doors, and then kick on and obviously get the goals and almost have the game won. And then just have to keep their nerve in the second half, which they just about did, didn't they, Mike?
Yeah, just about. I mean, John, you say it's a big turnaround, and obviously this run of form isn't to be sniffed at. Is it 8 wins in 9 games? I think.
Yeah.
Like you said, Adam, and that is great, and that takes doing whatever league you're in, whatever team is in, whatever league. It's difficult to do that, but I think it is. I'm not shocked. I'm shocked as if you put it into context as after the Coventry game, this run of form looked an absolute miles away. It looked, as we said at the time, an impossibility. But we always knew that this was a talented group of players, didn't we? And I think they will be looking at themselves and saying, this is how we should have been playing all season. These are the performances we should have been turning in, week out. Let's not forget that pre-Coventry, whilst there were some poor performances, there were actually some very, very good results. So, you know, we were squeaking out 1-0 wins here and there, weren't we? They just weren't much to write home about. Certainly nothing like what we've been treated to over the last sort of 6 weeks or so. I'm sort of just thinking, as you were saying there, John, is it the biggest turnaround ever? I'm not sure it is, but it is certainly one of the most unique seasons I can remember as a Watford supporter. Already, no matter how it ends now, we're down to single digits of games left. There's only 9 games left in the season all of a sudden. But already, whatever happens, I think it'll be one of the most unique and sort of curious seasons as a Watford supporter ever. But straight back to the present day, I think Adam summed it up perfectly. It was an absolute professional performance. I thought early on, I thought, crikey, first 5 minutes, it looked like we all did it as Watford supporters, didn't we, today? We thought, right, a brilliant win at the weekend. We've won at Cardiff. We go to Rotherham, who haven't, they're fighting for their lives. They haven't been able to train for 2 weeks. This has got Rotherham 1, Watford 0 written all over it. And I defy any self-respecting Hornet to say that didn't cross their mind. And then I thought for the first 5 minutes, it did feel a little bit like we took a little while to switch on.
We were giving them, it was almost like we were trying to suss them out a little bit.
Perhaps, because I just think we were a bit slow.
Well, it was a thing in my head, like, who on earth were we going to be facing? Were we going to be facing a very rested team who had all the energy going for the 90 minutes? They haven't played for 2 weeks. Or are they going to be mentally all over the place and not know what they're doing? And it was like, well, you're doing something. There's an energy there, but they weren't quite together. They weren't really anywhere near as worrying as Cardiff were on the weekend.
Oh, God, no. No.
And I suppose that was quite a nice thing. And it was the first goal. By the way, Sierra, 2-2. Yeah. I mean, only one of those Watford, but 2-2. You know, that first, yeah, that was literally Watford's first purposeful attack, with Ismail Assar just hitting as hard as he could, really, at the goal. And it got for the corner and the set piece. Sierra got on the end of it for his first goal for Watford, but not first goal in a Watford shirt.
Quickness of thought from it was that, it's like you say, John, it was Sarr who forced it. He forced the issue early on. The difference all night, wasn't it? The quality that Watford had up front. You know, Ismail Assar prowling around like we've spoken about in the last few podcasts, just absolutely dominating up there. And as soon as that first goal went in, you did feel like any of that. You know, it was only, you know, I could almost hear Adam sighing in the background there, saying, "Oh, Mike, come on, don't pick up on that first fight." It was only a 5 minute period, but I did think, "Ooh, is it going to be a dodgy night?" But as soon as that first goal went in, I think any concerns were very, very quickly dispelled, and it almost became a case of once again. And you know, Watford have done this to better sides than Rotherham, with better with less problems than Rotherham, could have completely and utterly blown them away without trace. You know, it was kind of 3-0 in the blink of an eye. I know I'm jumping ahead, but once that first goal went in, Sierra Alta's well earned header, it just felt like, right, okay, we've arrived. Let's get on with what we know we can do now.
You know what it made me think of? Obviously, a lot of people that will be listening, men and women, are very much looking forward to going playing five-a-side football again on a midweek night at Goals or, you know, wherever they're going. That's what it reminded me of when I saw Rotherham. They were just full of adrenaline at the beginning of that game, just running around like, yes, we're playing football again. And they did look really, really confident. But I think that experience that Watford had from the game against Cardiff, which was far more sort of industrial and agricultural, stood them in good stead to just sort of go, no, it's all right. OK, look, we've been through this before. We've got that sort of learned experience of exactly how we deal with this. Ride it out. And then Will Hughes started to get on the ball, just tick along. And then, you know, to kick on beyond that first goal, and that the current, you know, that theme through all three of them was Philip Zinchenko and his distribution. He looked really lively this evening. Once again, always able to go both ways, cutting back onto his right boot. And that second goal was, you know, I mean, it could have been either one of the two finishes. You know, if it had been Nathaniel Shalabar's little flick, great. Blackman saved really well. But then Ismail Assar, that was a clever finish to sort of adjust onto his left boot and finish into the roof of the net. So, you know, there was lots of sort of good things within that movement. Obviously, Zinchenko being there and being confident and looking all the way through, I thought, like he was the playmaker. And even down to some of the sort of the signals that he was giving for corners, yeah, and set pieces and things like that. Clearly, they've been working on them quite a lot. You know, there was that new signal. I don't know if they do that a lot in Norwegian football or Danish football or whatever, where, you know, where he's played. But I've not really seen the flat palm on top of a head before. I've seen one arm go up or two hands go up, but not the I'm wearing a cap. That clearly means I'm going to fling it into the near post and João Pedro is going to come and try and sort of flick it in. Old school Watford, really, isn't it? Sort of John McClellan sort of sneaking in and after the flick on at the near post. So, you know, it's, yeah, you know, they've obviously been working on things and they came off, especially with that third goal as well.
Yeah, I love the fact that the third one after goals from Sierra and Saar and then Semmer, the three S's. And I think from what I've seen, I half heard John mention it on the commentary, then saw John Sinclair mention it. It's the first time since August 1986 when three players of the surname started with the same letter. And that was my first ever game. So it's a very long time ago since it happened.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was Barnes, Bissett and Bardsley. That first half sort of just went on and it really felt like, wow, you know, maybe not wow, but that is a performance you can see. All the games that we've seen Watford play, you could see all that experience coming through in that first half performance as individuals, but also as a team. And so the second half just threw things out a little bit, but for good reasons, I think. You know, particularly when it comes to substitutes, Adam. You know, the first substitutions came like just 8 minutes into the second half. Our favourite duo of Kiko and Ismail Assar, but on comes Ngakia. And Andre Gray, starting to give those boys, it felt like more for a rest rather than give people extra minutes of that one, Adam.
Yeah, obviously everyone will have been worried seeing Saar go down before being substituted. But then when he and Kiko both went off, it looked far more like it was a planned substitution. But we can hear what Sisko said about Saar at full time.
I have a big respect for Rotherham because... they was a difficult situation before about COVID, and today also the guards of them now was in the bench. I have all my respect for the team because I know what is the work with the situation about COVID. I think it was a amazing performance. I think our team right now is brilliant. They understand what we want, what is our moment, and the most important is every day I think we are improving in different situations. Today we have a difficult game. We know about this team, and this team also is a difficult team. But I think the team was in good situation, in an attack, in defense, and have the control of the ball, save the game. I think right now the team is in good situation, but we need to work hard for improving in different options.
Ismail Assar, you took him off at the start of the second half. He was sitting down. Is he okay?
Yeah, and we will see tomorrow. You know, I never spoke about injuries because I don't know exactly. Sometimes I can lie you without. But we will see tomorrow what is the problem. And you know, Assar is like a superman, and sometimes he's a... maybe a little tired and he's ready for the next game. We will see.
The other substitutions, Mike, again, really felt like they were going to be for just giving rest. You know, Chalabar and Hughes, they haven't played as many games as Ismail Assar and Kiko has played this season, that's for sure. I think that's the first time Sar's been substituted. I think, yeah, if he's ever played, he's played the whole 90 minutes. I think he's only missed four games. But they're definitely there for a lot of rest. Zinchenko had got a knock. It's warming, it's comforting, that the fact that these substitutions came on and we didn't fall apart. They came on, they filled the spaces, and we continued, and we did score a fourth goal.
Yeah, well, so there's a couple of things that are pleasing about the substitutions. A, that we made them, and we earned the right to do that by effectively putting the game to bed by half time. We gave ourselves the opportunity to think about it, let it percolate at half time, and work out how we're going to give these guys a rest. You're absolutely right to point out Ismail Assar, John, and the incredible shift that he's put in throughout the season, undoubtedly getting a buffeting from defenders, midfielders and attackers, probably in equal measure, such as the amount of ground he makes over the field. So for him to get him up, get his feet up for an extra half an hour longer than he already would have done was absolutely vital, and likewise Kiko. What was really nice was I thought the second batch of substitutions, the two midfielders that came on, Chalabar again was busy and looked good again this evening. I thought he was really had one of his better games of the season. So get him rested. And Zinchenko, probably his best performance in a Watford shirt in the league, certainly instrumental. He get him off, sort of let him have the walk off, knowing his job of work is done, and knowing that he's being taken off almost as a reward. You've done your bit, mate. Now we want to protect you. So that will give him confidence, I think. It sounds an odd thing to say, but hopefully you know what I mean. And the two guys that came on to replace them, if you're Rotherham and you think, oh God, they're getting rid of their tricky Zinchenko and that Chalabar who's everywhere. You've got Dan Gosling, who's helped Bournemouth to the Championship and played in the Premier League, and Carlos Sanchez, who's played 12 games shy of 100 international games for Colombia. It's like, oh, I mean,
there's two things about that. One, they missed the penalty.
Yes.
And that must have been, this could be ours. This is the moment turn. Oh, no.
Well,
then they scored the goal. And then all of a sudden, those subs score a goal within how many touches? How many touches, Adam, do you reckon, from Rotherham scoring their goal and us scoring our fourth?
Well, I reckon. And we didn't quite see it, did we, on the on the actual live action. But the ball will have gone back to William Troost-Ekong. So that's one. He played the ball forward to Gray, two.
Yep.
Gray off to Semmer, three. Semmer back to Gray, four. Gray's shot, five. And then onto Gosling, six. Probably six, seven, eight. You know, that there or thereabouts. So, yeah, it was a great response. But also, I mean, it's worth saying that Daniel Backman, obviously in a game like that, you know, there were times that he had to be strong. He had to sort of show his mettle. It wasn't, as we mentioned before, it wasn't quite as the same style as Cardiff. But there were moments when he was called upon and he did what he needed to do. And then obviously saving the penalty, it's great for his confidence. And he'll be on cloud nine at the moment. He's been called up for Austria, international caps. He's looking forward to the international break. And there's no reason for Ben Foster at the moment to displace him. So, you know, it really good for him. And then, you know, on the substitutions, I know you're sort of going through them, and that initial sort of the way that it changed things, it made it a little bit like a basketball game and it was sort of end to end. But what I did like to see, and Mike obviously mentioned Carlos Sanchez and the experience that he's got, I quite liked the fact that Will Hughes was given a breather with, 10 minutes to go, and that he could just play that role. Maybe not trying to sort of tick along in the tempo quite as Will Hughes does, or with the skill and the guile that Will Hughes has, but just simply going, right, look, okay, fine, I'm sitting here. I'm sitting and I'm just playing it easy. Yeah, he gave away a free kick at the end, but that could happen to anyone. But it's been nice to see how he's just gradually just played very simply. Just keep it simple. Don't overcomplicate things. And that's all you need in that midfield. And for Gosling to come back, play, get some minutes under his belt, you know, having come back from that injury, it's all good. It's because they are the supporting cast. We know that Sisko likes to stick with the players that he likes. And there's no reason to deviate from that starting 11 at the moment. And then you think, right, well, then you've got Cleverley coming back, hopefully after the international break. So you've got real competition for places, or you've got a different way of doing things in different games. So, you know, they're in really good touch at the moment. And hopefully, you know, heading into that international break, hopefully, fingers crossed, I know Birmingham will have a new mindset because they've got rid of, or they'll have Lee Bowyer in charge. You know, they can head into that international break and have it as a really nice breather with the money in the bank. That's yours. We're not going to take that away from you. It's like, you know, and then go again after the international break, fingers crossed.
And it's not long to go after that international break, is it, Michael? 8 games left of this season. 8 games, where are they gone?
I'm going to pull you up a little bit there because, yes, I think we're
pull
right.
Pull you up or bring us down, Michael? Which one is
no,
it?
No, just a gentle sort of fatherly sort of, come on, lads, come on, come on. We need to, let's enjoy it. Absolutely. It's a 4-1 away win, an 8th win in 9. We absolutely have to enjoy it. But to talk about the international break, we have a game to go. And Birmingham will pose a threat. There were a couple of times tonight where Watford did switch off. There was a free kick routine where it was obvious that Rotherham had a man down the right. They had an overload down the right, played it into space, and that allowed them to set up a very dangerous attack. They did have the penalty, so we've got to stay on top of it. We cannot get blasé. I know the players won't, but I don't think we should either. I think we need to stay alert to the challenge that lies ahead. Birmingham will be a very, very different challenge, and this group have got to get themselves up again to do it all over again, and then we can talk about a rest. I think it's, like I say, we've absolutely got to enjoy tonight, but straight away eyes on Saturday, because Birmingham, what, they're 3 points clear of Rotherham, who are in the drop zone. So they are going to be scrapping for their lives. There's a new manager to impress. I know they will have had one game under their new manager, Lee Bowyer, by the time they come to Vicarage Road. But it's another very difficult challenge that faces us. And this side isn't perfect, I think. We should have had more goals, I think. Andre Gray, I think, will be frustrated. I thought his touch was really
Listen
good. For the Gosling goal, I loved his.
John, can
his
you just touching. Fade him down? Have you got your faders there? Just fade it. Just fade
what
him
I
down.
Say that, Adam, I can go longer than your fader can. So when you eventually pull it back up, I'll still be here.
But what I was, I know what you're saying, Mike. But I suppose I'm not getting carried away. I agree. But what I think is that they are in such a different place. I don't mean we're all happy and jolly. Remember after Norwich, everyone was happy and jolly, and look, we can beat Norwich. We're great. But it was all false in many ways. This isn't.
No, I agree.
It's there. Of course it's not finished. It will be finished when the season is finished. That's when this squad that are currently the Watford team will finish whatever they are, and we'll hopefully have to get some more in because we've been promoted. But you can't. Everyone knows that. You're telling us the obvious.
I know. I think it's more of a self-defence mechanism. Don't get me wrong. This is a fine, fine team in fine, fine form. And they will go into Saturday's game with Birmingham, despite everything I've just said, full of confidence. And we as supporters should too. I just think we can't get carried away. It's been a good night for Watford. Brentford have dropped points. It looks like Swansea are going to drop points at the time of recording. But we, at one stage, were 9 points behind Brentford. That changed in a week. So we know what can happen in this division. I'm just urging a little bit of caution, and even I'm starting to depress myself a bit now. That's miserable, isn't it? But I'm just desperate for us to capitalise. I think it was a really professional performance tonight. Everyone who needed to do well did well. I'm looking at Zinchenko in particular. I think his incremental improvement is happening quicker now. It's really happening apace, and he was, you know, we teams like Rotherham are still obdurate. They're difficult to play against, and they still needed to be taken apart, and Philip Zinchenko played a huge part in that. So for him to have added confidence ahead of along with Ismail Assar and João Pedro, who was his brilliant self again tonight. Ken Semmer was busy and looked dangerous again. Hughes and Chalobah coming into form, and the back line looking great. Look, they're all in fine, fine form. I think what it is, lads, I'm just a bit nervous about the run-in already.
Let's not forget, playing in the Championship, I know people say, oh, it's fun because you win more games. It's horrible. It is a horrible, horrible league. And it's a horrible experience when you're trying to go for promotion. Let's not forget that. So, you know, let's enjoy the fact that they've not only won 8 wins out of 9, but they've also dealt a couple of little blows as well to the other teams around them, with Swansea losing at a Bournemouth, with Brentford, you know, just having that dismay of giving away a 2-goal lead at Derby. It's all about little punches and little digs. It's a scrap all the way to the end. And, you know, they're all right at the moment, but there's going to be more digs coming in from all sorts of angles. And let's not forget those final few games, you know, with Norwich and Swansea and Brentford and Luton and Reading. You know, the scrap is on. But Watford, you know, they're landing some decent punches at the moment, and that's really, really good. It's a good situation to be in. But, you know, we can maybe just switch off a little bit during the international break and then just get ourselves ready for the real dirty brawl that's to come.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Part of the Athletic Podcast Network, this is From the Rookery End.
Youth team football, it's been a core part of Watford, has been a core part of the things that we have enjoyed as a Watford fan, and knowing that we have what was deemed to be one of the best youth academies in the country. It's a forerunner for how things are meant to be run. And Mike, you know, on the podcast over the last 10 years, we've spoken to lots of people, we've spoken to a lot of young players, and there's always an element of pride, isn't there, when young players make it at Watford?
There absolutely is, yeah. And you know, 10 years ago when we started this, they were really, really important to Watford. And during that time, Watford performed pretty well against some difficult backdrops, largely down to those young players. So I think it's certainly ingrained in us, John, isn't it? Our generation, that they just feel important to us as a club. And I think you can widen that out and you look at the ethos of the club and the whole family reputation. And I think the idea that Watford can identify a young talent, nurture him, bring him through, or her, of course, these days, into a professional footballer with a decent career is something that you'd like to think your club can do. So whenever it does happen, and it happened a lot more frequently 10 years ago than it does now, it absolutely is a source of pride. There's probably one song that every club likes singing. You know, you can hear it in every terrace, where he's one of our own. That always gets sung with gusto, and like you say, John, absolute pride. So yeah, I think it's something we keep our eyes open for, isn't it?
Yeah, we spoke to Nick Cox, who was the former academy boss about 10 years ago. He went on to Sheffield United, and he's at Manchester United now, quite a big club. We spoke to him in the summer, in fact, and I love how he looked back on all the boys that came into, you know, the Harefield Academy. He still speaks to many of them, and even if they're not footballers, even if they're not top footballers, you know, he sort of still sees them and knows what they got out of being part of the Watford Academy setup. But Adam, it's a different ball game now, this youth football, you know, especially since we were young fellas watching football. They come through a lot younger than they used to, and that isn't just a feeling because we're now over the age of 40. But there's this under 23 thing, and there's this bunch of young players who we keep hearing about. You've written a fair few articles on them. It's different about how they're being looked at, isn't it, by the club?
Going back to when the Pozzo era started, it was very much a switch from, you know, the old school and bringing players through to a top-down approach, wasn't it? Whereby that the academy wasn't deemed to be the answer at that time. There were a few around, but linking into what Mike was saying there about, you know, he's one of our own. One of the last ones really that we were singing about was Sean Murray, wasn't he? And I remember speaking to him not that long ago when he was, you know, playing in the Europa League against Arsenal or Dundalk, where he is at the moment. So it does show you that it has been quite some time since someone has come into the side, established themselves and played a significant part. There have been other players, you know, Tommy Hoban, for example. More recently, you know, Brandon Mason, he came in for a little bit under Valter Mazzari. And there have been a few others more recently. But you know, if you look at that under 23 side at the moment, it's not a it's not an academy that is, you know, one of the top level academies. They're playing a couple of rungs down. When we have seen some of the players coming into the setup en masse, for example, when we played against Tranmere in the cup last year, and it was difficult circumstances, of course, that the games were coming thick and fast, and the real priority was staying in the Premier League. The quality wasn't necessarily there for them to come in and make a big impact. But I think it was more the scenario at the time. But it seems as if from that time, you know, from the games against Tranmere, that there's been a lot of hard work going on behind the scenes. There's been structural changes. There's been, you know, coaching changes, for example. You know, Hayden Mullins has now gone. Richard Thomas is sort of overseeing everything, but Omar Reza is now the lead coach for the under-23s. Richard Shaw, who was at Crystal Palace, you know, he's now come in as well. And I was very impressed with the interview that I saw with both of them when they were with Emma Saunders on Hive Live, and they were speaking about, you know, how they see the development of players and the importance of, you know, nurturing talent, bringing talent through. And seemingly, from their perspective, it does have a place at the moment at Watford. And I think we're sort of getting a feeling now that it is going to become more and more important if things don't go to plan at the end of this season, if we don't get up into the Premier League. I think they are going to have to tap into some of that talent a lot more. And there seems to be a few players, you know, we'll go into them now, but that have come into that group. They might not have come all the way through from, you know, the under sixes, but, you know, they have come into that group and are starting to make an impact. And there are some that have been through, you know, that have started and came in, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old. So, you know, there are things that are being done, and they seem to have just sort of got a grip of it a bit better nowadays. Hopefully we're going to see the fruits of their labour over the next couple of years.
Yeah, we will see. And I think you're right. You're absolutely right, Adam. Like, where do they fit in? It depends on where Watford are. It is great that we're giving a young player, 18 years old, or 19 now, in Joao Pedro. But there's two players who came in January who have got distinctive fathers from a footballing background. Maurizio Pochettino Jr., who we heard from. You spoke to his dad. And you've spoken to another dad.
Yeah, you may have heard of him. It's called Dennis Bergkamp.
Oh, yeah. He was
quite a good player back in the day.
I don't know about signing his son. I would probably take a punt on signing him, even yeah. now.
He could. He could still put on a show, I'm sure. It was absolutely great to speak to him, because he doesn't really do that many interviews. And fortunately, He was willing to sit down. You know, we organised the interview at the end of last week, and we had an hour on Zoom talking about, in the main, Mitchell. But it was great being able to touch on moments in his career in the context of fatherhood as well. So he was able to talk about, even prior to thinking about having his son, he was already learning about the difficulties of being a famous footballer with a son, because he played under Johan Cruyff. He was a teammate of Jordi Cruyff at Euro 96. So he could already learn about that dynamic. And I think subsequent to Mitchell arriving, you know, he was able to sort of learn about how to manage that situation from, you know, the late, great Johan Cruyff. I'm sure many people remember the goal that he scored against Argentina at the 98 World Cup in France. Because everyone was on the Dutch's side, because Argentina had beaten England in that dramatic, you know, round of 16 tie with, you know, Michael Owen, David Beckham, Simeone, penalties, Sol Campbell, all that sort of stuff. So everyone was on the Dutch side. It was really, really lovely to hear him talk about that, because, you know, it was a great goal, great moment. But in the crowd was Henrietta, who's his wife, and she was heavily pregnant with Mitchell. So he said, you know, he was there. You know, it felt like he was there at that time, even though he wasn't born. And then, you know, he basically talked about his path all the way through from, you know, a little kid playing football, as, you know, us lot would have done, for a local side. He was playing for a team called Hadley Rangers near Barnet, and then sort of just playing park football. And Dennis Bergkamp would be on the touchline as the dad, you know, which is fantastic. And then going back to Holland. He played for a smaller side, good side, but a smaller side, Spakenburg, which is Henrietta's hometown, his wife. And then he went, rather than going with Dennis through the Ajax route, he went to a place called Almeida and then spent 9 years there. And he did say that sometimes the dynamic wasn't quite right because there was a lot of expectation on Mitchell, who incidentally does have Dennis as his middle name. And then he talks about coming over here and how it all came about. Coming to, firstly, Arsenal, obviously now being at Watford, talking about some of the sort of the physical similarities, but also talking about the actual similarities to growing up. Because when Dennis was at Arsenal in the olden days, they were training at Watford's training ground now before they moved in 1999. So, you know, it's gone full circle that Mitchell's now training on the pitches, or pretty much the same pitches. I'm sure Scott Tingley's got them prepared very, very well nowadays in comparison to the olden days at Arsenal. But, you know, the same pitches, he's living the same life. So it was absolutely great to speak to Dennis, and I really appreciated his time. And yeah, I guess we can have a little listen to what he said.
When I scored the goal against Argentina, the next day I was with my wife in the pool in a villa they we rented for my family. Yeah, it was very peaceful after the hectic day before scoring that goal and everything, which was quite a special goal. And yeah, that always stuck in my mind that Mitchell was still, he wasn't born yet, but yeah, in a way he was there, of course, during that tournament and watching the goal from the stands. Yeah, I sometimes speak to Mitchell in a funny way. But, well, you've already been on a pitch with 60,000 people, so there's no pressure for you, you know, if he sometimes gets a little bit nervous for a game or whatever. I said, just relax, because you've been there already. Yeah, it's not a big thing. I could really see, okay, wait a minute, that's how I played football as well, because I had the feeling as well, I want to be there on the pitch, you know. I'm a shy, well, I'm a modest guy, but I want to be there. I want to perform. I want to entertain people, and I want to do well. It doesn't really bother me if it doesn't go well. That attitude he got during the last 3 or 4 years, I guess, that really made a difference for him. That made a difference for us as well, seeing that, okay, he really wants to go for it, to play football. And that resulted in where he is now. It all started with Ian Wright coming here, doing the interview that he did. He basically said, like, why is he not trying in England? Why is he not trying it at Arsenal? It got the ball rolling, and in the end, there was a trial planned. So many coincidences. It's unbelievable, because he's living the life now that my wife and me lived when we joined, of course. Yeah. It's the same training pitches, and Sainsbury's is across the motorway. And it's the same area that we spend our life for Mitchell as well. I mean, where he went to school is only a mile away. It's incredible. And he said as well, straight from the beginning, he said, this feels like home. Being in England again, yeah, he's always been, in our opinion, he's always been more English than Dutch. He loves the culture. He loves the country. He loves the nature and parks and system, and yeah, he fitted in from day one.
You know, Adam, is he his only son?
He is his only son.
So no pressure at all. No pressure at all to say, well, I'm sorry, son, you've got to play football. But with a Dutch accent, of course. You know, it's interesting, like, to hear that, and almost like to hear from, you never really get a lot from young men in terms of what they want to share, and what they're, especially footballers, who, how much they want to share. But there was a good old proud dad in there, wasn't there?
Yeah, very much so. You can tell that he's so proud at the moment, and he would absolutely love to be able to be there and watching games at the moment, because it is actually quite an important time for Mitchell, because, you know, he's only got a couple of months before his initial deal at Watford runs out. So he does have to show, because he is 22 as well. So there's not sort of much mileage in him being in the under 23 setup for long. And he has been training with the first team, but you can tell that Dennis would love to be there, and he's keeping in touch. And he was joking about, you know, I'm getting links sent through of games. And I'm like, where am I watching this? Like moody streams of games in, you know, Cardiff and all this sort of stuff. It was just really funny. He just wants him to be happy. I think that's what came across, you know, when I spoke to Maurizio Pochettino, when I spoke to Dennis Bergkamp. They just want their sons to be happy. They just want their children to be happy, like we all do. And obviously there is pressure, and there is external expectation, but you just want your children to be happy in whatever they do. And I think what he has learnt, and this has sort of happened over the last few years, is that he has seen the development of his son into almost sort of grasping this opportunity now and thinking, I'm not just here because I am Dennis Bergkamp's son. I'm here because I'm a good footballer. And he's now having an opportunity to prove that in his own right. It's the same for Maurizio Pochettino Jr., you know, having stepped out of the Spurs academy from, you know, where his dad was, to now being at Watford. He's on his own. He's having to show it on his own during a difficult time as well, you know, with Mitchell over here, you know, living away from home, being here during COVID as well. It's tough. It's going to be a real sort of test of their characters. And, you know, fingers crossed for both of them, not just because they've got snazzy names. It's just because they may well turn out to be decent players and, you know, important players for Watford. So we just have to sort of wait and see and see what happens. And you never know, because Estelle, who is his eldest daughter, this is Dennis Bergkamp's daughter, Estelle, she actually goes out with Donny van der Beek, who plays for Manchester United. So she is already over in England, and he coached Donny van der Beek when he was like 11, 12 years old. So he's like, I've known him for a long time. You know, I know him.
I've got his number. I know him.
And he, yeah, exactly. He knows me. So, you know, don't step out of line, son. She's over here. Mitchell's over here. Maybe Dennis might be coming over next, obviously by car, because he still doesn't fly, but it may well be that he comes over. And, you know, the thing that's really interesting, just final point on Dennis, is that, you know, what came across in that, and, you know, reading ahead before the interview, was, you know, when he was on the coaching staff at Ajax, he was happy being part of the coaching team. He doesn't want to be a head coach. He doesn't want to be a manager. He doesn't want to be front of house. He's quite, you know, keen to work in a backroom team. And I think that sort of reflects his personality. He spoke a little bit in the piece as well about sort of being quite modest, but doing his talking on the pitch and just sort of doing it with his actions rather than being a shouter and a baller. He's more into the sort of craft of football. And you could imagine he would be wonderful to work with him on the training pitch, to see how he moves, how he can sort of just tell you just those little sort of delicate touches that you used to see him just sort of sprinkle on matches.
Yeah, but you always think that you can't teach that. It's almost like that's the natural flair, the natural touch that they have, and you hope that's the thing that he can just pass down through genes, not being passed down through coaching tips from dad in the back garden.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I completely agree. I mean, you can learn things. You can learn, you know, how to kick a ball in a certain way, and you can learn from, you know, great players who can tell you how to do it. But obviously, yeah, the gene factor in this situation is fascinating, because when you see Mitchell Bergkamp, you see Dennis Bergkamp. You see everything, the way that he runs, his profile, his hairline, the way that he glides across the field. He's slightly different. He's a bit more sort of... he's more of a sort of a box-to-box midfielder, more of a link-up player rather than a sort of a creative player. But there's even these little moments where, I don't know if you remember when, I mean, obviously, you know, people can picture that wonderful goal that he scored against Newcastle, where he sort of flipped the ball around the right-hand side of Nikos Dabizas and then adjusted his body and slotted it home and all that sort of stuff. But those little sort of toe-tap movements that Dennis used to make when he was changing direction, you know, just those little sort of hops of just, I don't know, just wonderment, like he was just sort of just sprinkling stardust on the football pitch as he was moving his feet. You see that on occasion with Mitchell, the way that he moves, and it's just fascinating. And from Dennis's point of view, speaking about his son and seeing his son's development, he has seen that start to come, because he's seeing his son sort of take hold of this opportunity that he's got, as I was mentioning, and sort of gain confidence as well. So, you know, fingers crossed for him. Look, if it doesn't go to plan, I'm sure he will go somewhere else, or someone else might pick him up, or whatever happens. But, you know, just on a human level, I've spoken to someone's dad who's got a footballing son who's really hopeful that he does well. Doesn't matter that it's Dennis Bergkamp, but it does make the story even more interesting.
The other player you've talked about, current young player you've written about, Adam, is one Joseph Hungbo. He doesn't have a famous dad that I know about. He's that other sort of player that Watford are bringing in. Not from Harefield. They're bringing them in from other clubs, but they're giving them those opportunities in the youth setup. He looks like just another one of the next one off the rank. What was, do you think, special about Joseph?
Before you answer that, Adam, I'd be interested to just get your snap take on this, because it's interesting you mentioned Mitchell Bergkamp's age, which is, you know, early 20s, what, 22. And we can't fall into the trap of thinking Joseph Hungbo's really young as well. But when you compare him to, we mentioned João Pedro, for example, early in the podcast, you know, he's got 2 or 3, 4 years on someone like João Pedro, who's already played in the Premier League and is really making a name for himself in the Championship now. Do you think that people like Joe Hungbo, Ad, would have got a chance, or would have forced himself in if Watford weren't so light on the bench? Do you think his talent is, has he caught the eye enough to really force his way in under normal circumstances?
I think that's a difficult one. I think the fact that the squad has been stripped down quite a lot, and the process of doing that started in the summer, it's contributed to not only the story of Joseph Hungbo, but also Mitchell Bergkamp and Maurizio Pochettino Jr. Being part of the setup. Because if you remember, back in the summer, there was a lot of need for those under 23 players to actually be training with the first team to make up numbers, because there weren't that many players around. And then later, you know, in January, the same thing was happening. So they were keen to have some experienced bodies as part of that under 23 setup. So they thought, okay, well, let's give Mitchell a go. Let's give, you know, Maurizio Pochettino. I think they're sort of different levels. I think they've got, you know, really high hopes for Maurizio Pochettino Jr. And they're hoping for the same with Mitchell Bergkamp. It does sort of also kick on with Joe Hungbo, because, you know, he is now, what, 21 years old. That is the time that you want to be, you know, making the step up from the under 23s into the first team if you haven't already done it. So I think they're still trying to strike the balance correctly with that under 23 setup. They want it to be more sort of 17, 18, 19 year olds as the core of the group, rather than sort of older players. And there are some, you know, some talented players in that group. Bosson Lawal, who's a very, very exciting central defender. He can play sort of central defensive midfield as well, sort of makes very sort of strong runs, but he's very good at organising at the back, but he can also bring the ball forward very well. We've spoken about Sonny Blulo Everton before. You know, he made his name in the Youth Cup run a few years ago, and he's developing physically as well. He's looking a bit bulkier, so I'm looking forward to seeing how he develops. Dan Phillips as well, obviously we've seen him come in. So there are players that are coming through that have sort of, we've seen the benefit of them coming through that age group from the 18s through to the 23s, especially in the case of Sonny. But going back to Joe Hungbo, his story is more about hard work, dedication, focus. And I was able to speak to his brother. He's one of 6 Hungbo children, and the brother that is just older than him is Jacob. And he actually looked after him, took him under his wing right from the start, really. And in the piece that I wrote for The Athletic, which I hope that people get an opportunity to read, because it's quite interesting just seeing how chances sometimes arrive out of nowhere. And he tells the story about that they used to all go to Saturday school. And one week they didn't have his mum didn't have the cash to give them to go to Saturday school. So his brother Jacob said, look, I'm going off to this trial that one of my mates has set up. There's going to be a Crystal Palace scout there. Why don't you come along, Joe? So he sort of got dragged along as the younger brother. Obviously was a talented footballer, but wasn't going to really make, you know, wasn't likely to sort of stick out amongst, you know, 11, 12 year olds when he's only 9. But at the end of it, he was the one that got taken on by Crystal Palace, got given a trial, and within a week he was sort of on the books of Crystal Palace. And then he went all the way through the age groups, and it wasn't until the last year before he was released that he sort of got shifted around, and it was a competitive really strong development group at Crystal Palace, and he got shifted out of position. His favoured position is out on the right hand side, so he can cut in on his left foot. Remember, he's a left footer, which is a benefit as well. And he got moved into a number 10 position, and he wasn't really sort of having as much of an impact as the coaches would have liked on games. He got a shoulder injury. He got sent out on a bit of a brutal loan, it sounds like, to Margate, and got sort of buffeted around. And then he got released soon after. And then the connection sort of kicked in with Fitz Hall, who'd taken charge of him. He'd taken over from his brother Jacob, looking after his interests. We all know Fitz Hall from his time at Watford and previously at Crystal Palace. He got him in at Watford, and they were like, yeah, we'll snap your hand off. Because, you know, a player of that calibre, free, no compensation, can come straight into the under 23 group, is going to be of benefit. And we've seen him sort of continue that hard work, that striving effort to make it, which had come from his family and his brother, especially Jacob, who's such a lovely guy to speak to. And he was really encouraging and so happy when he saw him make his sort of what they consider his real debut at Old Trafford, because he obviously had that sort of really tough time against Tranmere, didn't have a great game against Newport earlier on this season. But then recently, he seems to have sort of come in and stuck around. He's been on the bench a lot. And the cameos that he made against Wickham, against Nottingham Forest, also at Old Trafford, remember, he came in, cut inside from the right onto his left, had that shot. It was only deflected wide by Harry Maguire. You know, he's come in and he's making an impact. And that's all you can ask. So fingers crossed for him. And he's got another year after the end of this year. So he's got a real opportunity, you know, whether we go up or we don't, to hopefully get more game time. And he's looked confident, and he's looked like he knows what he's doing when he's on the football pitch. And that's all you can ask. You don't want to, you know, you don't want someone who's going to look like a rabbit in the headlights coming into the side. And he certainly doesn't look like that. He goes quick, he's direct, and he gets the ball in and he fizzes it in. So fingers crossed for him.
Yeah, he seems to be that player who, you know, he's coming through in the right way. We're not having to throw him in at the deep end like it almost felt like we were 10 years ago. But he's getting that exposure. He's getting those minutes. And it is exciting. And it would be fantastic if we saw him contribute something, one game, one mega game maybe, that gets us promoted. And you know, I really want to see those young players come through Watford. I think it's really important to me that we see them make an impact. Not have to be the stars of the show, as maybe they had to be in the past, especially with someone like Sean Murray under Sean Dyche. But it's important, as we said at the beginning, Mike, isn't it, that we have this thing that we've held dear to our hearts for decades now.
Yeah, it is. We've nicely come full circle, haven't we? I mean, we've talked about the differing journeys that these players have to go on to end up in a yellow shirt, either in the first team or in the under-23s, pushing for that first spot, effectively becoming successful professional footballers. You know, Dennis Bergkamp's son Mitchell, he has the benefit, but obviously also the pressure of being Dennis's son. Joseph Hungbo has had a very different route. You know, he had to battle as well. I love the detail in the piece, Adam, about, you know, post-Crystal Palace training, talking to his brother when he was trudging back up the hill to get the train home, when perhaps some of his peers were being picked up in flash cars and sped off back to their homes. But and they said, it will be worth it one day. And that's what fills you with joy, really, watching him sort of scampering down the wing, making an impact, knowing that he put those real hard yards in, and his brother helping him along, and I'm sure he helped his brother in different times as well. And it just gives you that sort of warm feeling, doesn't it, as a sport observer and also as a human, to know that someone has put the hard yards in, continues to put the hard yards in, and then is reaping the benefits and reaping the rewards with what have been, you know, really exciting cameos. You know, making you turning up and playing against Old Trafford, for anyone, that's going to be an absolute thrill, isn't it? Let alone a kid who felt like perhaps he might have been harshly treated by Palace and his dream might have been over, getting on at Man United, then coming on against, albeit sort of slightly weaker and potentially beaten opposition in the face of Forest and Wickham. But he has made an impact. He has been confident. And having read the piece and then looking back on his performances, he does feel like a chap who is grasping the opportunity, doesn't he? He's not, as you said, Ad, he's not a rabbit in the headlights, which perhaps we have seen. You know, I'd look perhaps at someone like Dom Quina, whose opportunities earlier in the earlier in the season. I don't think he necessarily grasped them in a very different team at a very different time, of course. But none of that from Hungbo. So it'd be absolutely fascinating to see how he gets along. But I think as an overall piece, it's interesting and important to give time to understand where these guys come from, the effort and the just the general up and down there is involved in getting to this stage. Just even have a fledgling career, it's very, very hard. So I think it we'll all do well to stop and remember that. And reading Adam's pieces on the subject is a really good place to start. So yeah, really enjoyed that and really enjoyed Hungbo's sort of cameo so far. And let's hope we see Bergkamp emblazoned across a yellow shirt and on the pitch doing some exciting stuff soon too.
If you want to read that article about Joseph Hungbo or the interview with Dennis Bergkamp to find more about his son Mitchell, then you can go to theathletic.com/rookeryend and sign up for a subscription. It's only $3.99 at the moment, about 40% off for the first 6 months. So take out the offer by going to theathletic.com/rookeryend.
A Watford FC podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is From the Rookery End.
Thank you very much for your time this evening, Michael.
Thanks a lot. Sorry to be so miserable. Well done, Watford. Thoroughly ruthless, thoroughly professional, thoroughly impressive. Come on, you horns.
Thank you very much, Adam.
It's a process of checks and balances, this podcast. And I think it's been really nicely dealt with there by Mike. So, yeah, well done, everyone. Good job.
We'll be back after the Birmingham City game this weekend. And do tell your friends that you can follow From the Rookery End wherever you get your podcasts. Second in the league, and the countdown is on.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.